Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at BigBlueInsider1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome back. Hour number two of our program. Yours truly, along with Billy Rutledge. And we have the Olympics cranked up. Kentucky football's on the way. Baseball season's halfway through. The NBA draft comes up Thursday, so sports never takes a rest. But one of the things that has come to the forefront in the world of sports, more than it I think ever has, is mental health and wellness. And my next guest has become well-schooled in really both worlds. Chip Cosby, a longtime sports writer, and at one point had one of the biggest beats in the state of Kentucky, UK football, but then changed courses in his life. He moved over to TV and then eventually became a clinical social worker and therapist over in his hometown of Louisville. And he's on our celebrity hotline right now. Chip Cosby, good to talk to you, man.
Oh, Dexter, it's always a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, before we get into what I just described, I must ask you quickly about your beloved New York Knicks and how much fun did you have this past season? I know it ended prematurely, but suddenly they were relevant again. You were loving that, weren't you?
Yeah, man. I was just delighted to see a competent product on the court, man. I mean, it's been such a struggle. I think they've got some direction with Leon Rose, and, of course, I think Kenny Payne, he kind of put his imprint on some of their success this year. So I'm looking forward to seeing what lies ahead. It's been kind of hopeless over the last couple of decades, but looks like they're on the rise.
Big night coming up Thursday. Maybe Isaiah Jackson joins them, another Wildcat. So, and they've blown a few of those draft nights, haven't they?
Yeah, they look like they hit the mark with Quigley, of course.
Yeah.
They've got a couple picks in the first round. They may move up, but Isaiah Jackson is certainly somebody that I've seen and a lot of reports is somebody that the Knicks have a lot of interest in. And he seemed like he would fit the Thibodeau profile, a long athlete, great on the defensive end. Yep. So it wouldn't shock me to see him grab him.
Well, let me get back to the topic in hand, the subject for which I reached out, and that is really the overlap. Now, I don't know if that's really the right term, though, Chip, because I think, obviously, of course, athletes are people like you and me and have been struggling, just like everybody does at times, with mental health. But it's become not the taboo issue that it used to be. I mean, back in the day, people thought Jimmy Pearsall was crazy. And now people, athletes who seek help and speak publicly about mental wealth and mental health and wellness are lauded for that, which is a good thing. What has been your reaction as a guy who's worked in both worlds to see this coming more to the forefront?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, you can look at just a couple things that have gone on in the last couple of days. I mean, I would imagine that every president and athletic director in the Big 12 is probably in need of some therapy right now. The front office for your beloved Green Bay Packers,
yep,
they might be in need of some therapy right now, yep, dealing with all this Aaron Rodgers drama. But, you know, when I decided to pursue a career in mental health, I viewed it as a profession on the rise. Now, of course, at that time, I couldn't predict that we'd have a global pandemic and all of these, you know, social justice and some of the other issues that have come to light. And, you know, the demand for therapists is higher than ever. And I think one thing that, you know, working in sports allowed me to realize, and, you know, I'm sure you're the same way, is, you know, you're around these college athletes, these UK and U of L football and basketball players. And, you know, when I was a kid growing up and I watched them on TV, they just seemed larger than life to me. And I think that's the way the fans view a lot of these guys. But when you're around them and, you know, you spend time with them, at the end of the day, you realize they're regular guys with families, with personal lives, and with problems. And I think the one thing, the word I use is escapability. And it doesn't have anything to do with moving out of the pocket. You know, these athletes, a lot of times, their private lives are broadcast for all to see. And if they make a mistake, you know, it's out there. And I think it's a lot harder sometimes for these athletes. You know, you and I and, you know, a lot of people who, you know, work in the working world, you know, they can get away and decompress. It's a lot harder for athletes to do that in this day and age. And I think, you know, you're seeing that impact out there. And I think that's why a lot of athletes are starting to really champion the cause of mental health, because I feel like it's necessary.
Oh, yeah. You know, I thought about you, and I already booked you on the show, and I couldn't wait to ask you about this. Friday, I did an interview with WKYT with Dirk Minifield, who most of you out here know was a fine player at Kentucky, was one of the best high school players in the history of the state of Kentucky. Lafayette, he was Mr. Basketball. Had a sort of a troubled NBA career because he could not stay away from drugs. And he hit rock bottom, and now he is a counselor down in Houston for the NBA. But what he told me, Chip, which I thought was fascinating, was when he started getting high, when he was in high school, and especially in college, it was to help him deal with the pressure that we all assumed he was having the time of his life, you know, as a Kentucky basketball player. But he kept saying that getting high enabled him to be alone and deal with the pain he was dealing with, which is a word I never expected to hear from him. And I got to think that that's something you hear a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've had a couple of, you know, high school athletes as clients, and this is even on a smaller level. I think you look at it now. I mean, you know, if you look at the general premise of sports, it's viewed as a positive for your mental health, really. I mean, you're talking about, you know, physical activity and exercise. You're part of a team working together towards a common goal. There's discipline, there's accountability involved. Those are all good things. And, you know, with all of my new clients, one of the first things I ask them when they ask me about coping skills, I say, are you physically active? Are you out, you know, taking care of your body, you know, walking or doing some kind of exercise program? So the general theme of sports, I think, is viewed as a positive. Now, when you throw in all these other factors, you know, the money, the pressure, and you know, in Dirk's day, they didn't have social media. So, you know, that's an added factor with a lot of these athletes. And then you look at some of the things that are affecting the general public. I mean, you look at COVID. I mean, you look at politics. You look at all the racial tension. Those things have all filtered their way into the sporting world as well. So, you know, these guys and females, athletes are dealing with a lot. And the thing is, and I think what Dirk, I think what Dirk was probably trying to say is, when you're an athlete at a place like UK and you fail, then, you know, your failure permeates to millions of people.
Yeah.
I mean, there are millions, you know, there are so many people whose well-being, you know, is basically affected by how you perform on the court. You know, so that, I mean, that's a lot of pressure for these, you know, for 18, 19, 20-year-olds to deal with. I remember I had an exchange with a fan back in the day, and they were like, you know, when the cat flews, it just ruins my whole weekend. I don't want to go out of the house. I don't want to do anything. I'm mad at everybody. You know, so that's a lot, you know, that's a lot of pressure for a young man. You know, you're affecting the mental well-being of just about probably 50 to 60% of the state. So it's easy to see why sometimes that burden can kind of wear on these kids.
Chip, you hit on social media a little bit, and I'm sure that is nowhere near helping the people that you work with their mental health. But is there any positive impact to social media? Or when you work with someone, do you say, just log off?
It just depends on what, you know, where they're at. You know, I think social media can be a good thing. I mean, you know, like for me personally, social media, Twitter is a great way to keep up with what's going on. I mean, you know, Twitter is probably the best way to keep up with what's going on in the world. But at the same time, you have a lot of negativity, a lot of arguments, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that would be that would have negative consequences on your mental health. So I just urge my clients just to, you know, take the good, you know, use it for information. When it becomes too much, take a break. And I think that's the one thing that I think people are having a hard time doing right now. I think every now and then you just need to take a break from Twitter. You need to take a break from Facebook. You need to take a break from Instagram. I mean, when you are consuming that much on a daily basis, in addition to everything else you're dealing with, it's easy to see why people get overwhelmed. So I think social media is good for the exchange of information. And honestly, there's a lot of, you know, positive communication on as well. But once you get into the negativity, the back and forth, the name calling, the bullying, you know, that's when I think, you know, people have to really be aware and be have the ability to take a step back.
There's a reason they call it going down that rabbit hole. You can open it up just to see what's going on, and you know, 90 minutes later, you're like, where'd the time go? So that I understand. We're talking with Chip Cosby, formerly a sports writer, and now makes his living in clinical social work and therapy. And as I mentioned earlier, we were talking about the Knicks, but obviously you're an NBA fan. Kevin Love has come forward and talked a bit. It was more than a couple of years ago about that. And it kind of shook people, I think. It made some headlines, Chip. And I think that that was, I think, a huge step for him. And I think a huge step for the NBA in general. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think one of the perceptions, one of the negative stigmas of mental health that I think we're in the process of erasing right now is just the belief that, you know, asking for help signal is a signal of weakness.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you have guys like Kevin Love, I remember DeMar DeRozan, Naomi Osaka, there have been several athletes who have come out and talked about the value of mental health. So I think the more athletes that we get to come out and acknowledge that it's an issue, I think we can maybe erase that stigma and take it from a position of where it was looked at as a weakness as into, you know, displaying strength and courage, because it takes strength and courage for these guys, a lot of these guys and a lot of these female athletes who are, you know, dealing with mental health, to come forward and say, hey, I'm not okay. Because we, like I said, we look at these people as larger than life. We don't look at them as, you know, we see the money, we see the fame, we see the prestige, but we also maybe don't pay attention to maybe some of the other factors that may be causing them to be depressed or maybe may cause anxiety. And, you know, just all the things that we talked about, you know, those are all factors that can really be detrimental to a person's mental health, especially somebody in the limelight who really, like I said, it's hard to escape. I mean, it's really hard to get away, you know, if you're a high-profile athlete and just kind of decompress.
Chip, do you think we unfairly make these athletes role models in our society?
Yeah, I do. I've always felt that to a certain extent. But, you know, I understand why we do. You know, like sports, and, you know, that's one of the things that being in the industry for 17 years taught me. You know, sports is an escape for a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of us who have high-pressure jobs, are dealing with a lot of stress, have family things that we have to deal with. And watching games or getting enjoyment out of games is really something that helps us cope with some of the day-to-day things that we deal with. So I understand why, but at the same time, I think it might be unfair to the athletes to expect them to really be, to have that much responsibility for the well-being of society. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, they're playing a game, trying to support their families, you know, earning a paycheck just like everybody else. For them to bear the weight of, you know, the well-being of America based on, you know, if they win a game or how many points they score, I mean, it's understandable, you know, how that could affect, you know, a lot of athletes in a negative light.
Well, I'll let you go with this. You brought up Naomi Osaka, and I was going to, if you hadn't, she, of course, lit the cauldron at the Olympics, but she also kind of lit the fire when she refused to play tennis because she didn't want to have to take questions afterwards. And you've been a part of countless post-game interviews with athletes and coaches. What was your reaction to that? Because you and I have both been in places where there have been some real knucklehead questions and some real off-the-wall questions where you could understand why it would catch somebody off guard.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. You know, I think, you know, it would wear on. I mean, I can't sit here and say that if I had to go every day and answer the same questions over and over again, and, you know, like you said, some questions are better than others, you know, I would probably get tired of it. You know, now I think, you know, the thing that you have to look at too, and, you know this from, you know, covering UK for as long as you have, you know, some people are better at this than others.
Yeah.
People who, you know, dealing with the media, talking to reporters, I mean, it's like second nature. And, you know, you see there are a lot of athletes, I think, who enjoy it. But it's just like anything else. Not everybody's the same. There are some people who aren't, who I don't care how much money they're making or how good they are at their respective sport, talking to people you know, talking to a lot of people in big crowds just, you know, can be intimidating. And I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding that. But again, that's why we need to kind of humanize these people. There are a lot of athletes who are great at what they do, but, you know, they're not really comfortable. And you see it every year. I mean, you know, with every year when they bring in the freshman football players, you know, at that first interview, you know, that first interview session, you automatically know, okay, this guy's good. This is going to be my guy. And then you go to another guy, I'm like, he doesn't seem like he really wants to do this, maybe. And, you know, in fairness, some guys improve over time.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's just a situation where not everybody is naturally, you know, inclined to be good at dealing with the media.
No, and I will say this, and people might roll their eyes, but just based on clips I've seen, and there have been, like I said, we've all encountered really dumb questions. We've asked some dumb ones. But it's interesting to me that in the international media, it feels like there are more questions. I won't say they're malicious, but they're kind of mean-spirited, which always kind of disappoints me, but that's a topic for another evening because we are out of time. Chip, thank you so much. I'd love to chat some more with you about this when we can, and I hope you're doing well.
All right, Dick, Billy, thanks again for having me, guys.
Have a good one. Thanks so much. Chip Cosby, formerly of the Herald Leader, now a social worker and a therapist, and we're back in a minute here on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Chip Cosby for joining us. Coming up in a few minutes, Zach Thompson and I chatted after his win over the Louisville Bats, former Kentucky left-hander. Mr. Rutledge, did you attempt to watch any of the Olympic basketball?
Yes.
Are you a Peacock subscriber?
I am as of the last 2 weeks.
And how do you feel about that?
Disappointed. I really am. And not just because I'm having to pay premium dollars to watch the Olympics. It's because they put commercials into their streaming service,
yep.
Dick. I mean, what gives them the right? I'm already paying them for the service.
They paid for the right.
My God. I hate it. I'm going to cancel it as soon as the Olympics is over.
A lot of people will. But a lot of people will keep it because they don't want to go through the motions of canceling. Or they might like what they have. But it's really been interesting. I watched the free trial, 30 minutes of the Olympic basketball. And it was a replay. And I didn't realize it. And that's another thing that bugs me. And Kyle Tucker tweeted about this. Try to find out where, when, and how to watch stuff. I'm sure there's a really great website. I have no idea what it is. So anyhow, I'm watching a basketball, and I think it got to halftime or whatever. And I look down at my Twitter feed, and people are just ragging on. Of course.
After the loss to France.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yes. You know, and you know, guys like Mike DeCourcy and other journalists saying you can't have a sitting NBA coach just drop in and coach these national teams anymore. You just can't. And yeah, you and I have talked about this. Two best players in the league are who? Arguably.
LeBron and Durant.
And Anthony Davis. All
sure,
right, put
yeah.
him in the top
Anthony
five.
Davis, top five.
Not there. So is this our best team? No. But they're still not playing very well, right?
Right. They're not a team.
No.
You know, a group of individuals. You can throw any cliche you want about it.
Yeah.
But I agree with DeCourcy and others that coaching position doesn't need to be a lifetime achievement award.
Right.
It's, you know.
Very well said.
Is it Herb Brooks, the guy that coached the Miracle on Ice?
Yes.
You know, with a bunch of college kids, they were a team. It was a different mindset back then.
Well, and they were also amateurs, and he could grab them and do whatever he wanted with them. And not have to be deferential to them, you know.
Just a little bit more of that, though. We need a little bit more of that. Because when you represent this country, it's a lot different than when you're getting paid $20 million a year to play basketball in the NBA.
Yeah, no question.
A lot more people care.
Well, and the thing is, I can't really, I mean, they're playing. How many people turned it down? Devin Booker goes from, what do you have, 48 hours of rest?
Yeah, why is he there?
Well, I give him credit.
Give them rest.
Those guys are there because they want to be there.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Well, Welcome back to Gabriel Billy Rutledge, 280-2287. John is on line one. What's up, John?
Nothing much, Gabriel. I know we got Texas Oklahoma that might join the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, you don't like that, do you, John?
No, we ought to go by the way you used to when it started in 1933.
Well, of course. John, people are going to think you're like 90 years old, and I know you're not. So why are you so beholden to the old days?
Well, because things are probably a lot better off in the old days.
Well, some people might disagree. Some people might think that it's that things are better now. And you know, that's going to mean a lot more money for the SEC, right?
Yeah, it is.
But it's going to be it's going to make things tougher, though. I think for UK football, at times basketball. But this does give, as John Hale pointed out, two teams that usually make the NCAA tournament, and that's good for the SEC.
Yep. That means Texas A&M will have the rivalry back again like they used to.
Yeah, they will, but A&M's not going to be happy about it. They'll always have a rivalry.
They'll always have a rivalry.
Yeah. Trust me. I worked down there, John. I lived in there. I saw firsthand. And here's the other thing. They're always going to go after the same recruits, right? But now that they're in the same conference, it's going to be even worse. You know, now they're both SEC teams. Hey, come play in the SEC instead of the Big 12. That's what Texas A&M had going for it.
Would it be like your ex-wife moving into your subdivision?
Yeah, something like that. I was trying to go for a metaphor like that. That's pretty close, yeah. Not only that, but joining your country club and, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe your bowling team, yeah.
Just involved in everything.
Yeah, exactly. You know, can't make a move without checking with her. What else, John?
No, a whole lot. Since the ACC Big 12 challenge might be gone, I think it has. The ACC needs to have a challenge with the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Well, they got to figure that out. And the ACC is probably looking over there going, what are we going to do now? Every other conference in America is thinking the same thing. John, this will have the same kind of domino effect that we saw a few years ago when other leagues were breaking up and moving around. And, you know, you got teams and conferences. You know, Maryland should be in the ACC, and it's not.
Yeah, they should be.
You know, Nebraska should not be in the league it's in, but it is. I mean, that's just – we just got to get used to it, John.
And Nebraska should be Big Eight, like you said, so is Colorado, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, but it's just – it's just nuts. Maybe it'll all settle out, John. Who knows?
I know. And if we go back to the old days, Western Kentucky needs to go back to the Ohio Valley Conference like it used to be.
Yeah, I know. I loved the old OVC. EKU just left. It made more sense geographically, economically, in terms of not having to fly everywhere. But that's just not where we are right now, John. Appreciate your call. Good to hear from you. John always brings up some interesting topics. 280-2287. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Zach Thompson graduated from UK. I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure if he graduated yet. But he was drafted, a first-round draft pick out of Kentucky after the 2019 season. It saw him go 6-1 for the Wildcats. And he was absolutely one of, if not the best pitcher in the SEC. And if you follow UK baseball, you remember that he actually pitched. I thought he pitched his best game in the middle of the year, coincidentally, my brother's birthday, March 29th, against Georgia. And Georgia put its ace. It was Friday night. Man, the atmosphere was unbelievable that night at Kentucky Proud. And he goes a complete game, two-hitter, walk four, struck out 13, and the Wildcats win it in a shutout. It was unbelievable. Now, incredibly, he lost his next start at Missouri, which was not a great team, but his team didn't help him. They gave up. He gave up three runs, only one earned, struck out six, didn't walk any, and only gave up five hits. So it was that kind of year. He still went 6-1. So he's drafted by my Cardinals out of Kentucky, 19th pick in the draft. And in 19, he went immediately, of course, to rookie ball. Played in the Gulf Coast League, Then he moved over to the Florida State League, which is High A. They started him off this year in Triple A, and he got beat up. He was 0-6 when he got to Louisville Friday night with Memphis. Pitched against Hunter Green, and if you're a Reds fan, you know who that is. He is a hope for the Cincinnati Reds. Green, a former number one pick. Each pitcher went through the first nine guys. Each pitcher was perfect in the first three innings. Memphis, which is on an incredible hot streak, broke through and won the game 4-1. The bats never did break through against Thompson. He went six innings, did not give up a run. And Memphis actually now has won 15 straight. That was their 13th straight win.
That's a lot.
Last Friday. And after the game, I asked the PR guy, I emailed him. I said, I'd like to interview Zach. They're still in COVID protocol. They are not traveling. And the PR guy is part of the radio crew. So he said, I can't help you. And that's all he said. And the Louisville guy said, I can't help you either. I got my stuff to deal with. Very nice. You know, gave me a press pass. So I go with my brother and I. We buy tickets. Had a good time watching the game. And it was a really well-pitched game. So after the game, during fireworks, it's fireworks night, I kind of make my way into the dugout. People are looking at me, and I got a credential. Nobody on the minor league baseball level, hardly anybody, covers those teams in person, right? So I'm walking through the clubhouse, and guys are looking at me like, what's this? So I go walking in, and there's gear on the floor everywhere. It's kind of crowded. It's like a high school locker room. And here's Zach taking off his jersey, and he sees me from about me to you, Billy, about 15, 20 feet, and he does a double take. And so I walked up, and he started laughing. And he told me, he said, I saw you, and I thought, no way. No way. I thought, yeah, man, you know, here I am. So I had a chance to get caught up with him. And by the way, it's a noisy locker room. It's a noisy clubhouse. His teammates are making fun of him. But we got through it.
What the heck are you?
Good. Good to be back in Kentucky.
Yeah. Tell me how things are going for you. I mean, you look like you haven't changed much. I know you're better, but in terms of what you've learned, your approach and all that?
Yeah, learned a lot working with a lot of coaches, a lot of players. It's been a long year. Struggled a little bit. Just trying to get back out there every week and make good pitches.
Other than injuries at Kentucky, you never really struggled that much. So what's that been like for you mentally to deal with that? Because all pros have to deal with that.
I mean, it's not easy, but just I know every week I've got another chance to go out there and turn things around. So just trying to focus on the positives and not worry about what happened in the past because I can't change it.
You said that in college a lot. You did.
Well,
but you've always been that way, right?
Yeah, and it's helped. It's easy to let things pile up.
Yeah. Is it tougher to deal with that in the pros now?
I'd say it's not much different. I mean, it's always hard as a competitor to struggle at any level, and this level is no different than college in that aspect.
A lot more baseball in your life, though, now. No classes and all that. You know, being a professional, what's that like for you?
There's definitely an adjustment period. It's a little weird. A lot more free time. You're not always running around campus, running to classes, and just adjusting to the schedule. You know, you're basically working second shift. It's a little bit different.
You also, for lack of a better term, you've had to grow up now. You know, you're an adult. You're a professional contractor. I mean, what kind of adjustment was that like for you?
You know, it's still a game. We always kind of looked at it as just show up every day and play and work your tail off. And, you know, it's still baseball. It doesn't feel like a job yet, so that's a good thing.
Kind of an obvious question, but how did pitching in the SEC, which is so tough, help prepare you for this life?
It definitely helped. You know, up here guys are obviously pretty refined, but in the SEC you still can't take pitches off or they'll punish you too. So definitely helped get me ready for this.
You get to peek at the College World Series, pretty good final series between two SEC teams.
Of course. Love seeing the SEC do well.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. You kept an eye on the Wildcats.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. They need a little more help, don't they?
They do, but I think they'll get there. Yeah. They've got a good group of guys. I think they'll get it figured out.
What's it like for you pitching for this franchise? Because I think you grew up a Cardinal fan, didn't you?
What's that?
I think you grew up a Cardinal fan. What's it like?
Sure. We'll say I grew up a Cardinals fan.
Oh, you did not?
No.
Oh, no, you were. Were you coach? We'll keep that between you and me.
Probably a good idea.
You're a Cardinals fan now.
Absolutely.
And just moving up. I mean, what's that like for you to move from level to level? We're giving you a hard time right now, aren't we?
You don't want to know.
No.
I'm sorry. Well,
that's all right. Moving from level to level, what's that like?
I mean, at every level, I feel like guys chase a little bit less. They've got a little bit better approach. And you know, you just got to adjust to that. You got to learn on the fly.
Same approach in a mound, just trying to get better with each pitch? Or have you added anything?
Nope, haven't added anything. Just sequence better, spot up better. Get ahead, you know, at this level. If you don't get ahead, guys punish you for it.
Keep up with any of your old teammates?
Absolutely. I try to stay in touch with a good group of those guys. You know, a couple of buddies from school came down to Memphis a couple months ago, so it's good to see the guys.
Living the life, Zach Thompson, and it's just hard to imagine that was his first professional win. Seven decisions into his season, but like he said, you make a mistake, they're going to punish you. And less than 2 years prior, he was pitching in the SEC. Now he's in AAA. And I wouldn't be surprised if my Cardinals brought him up in September.
Funny locker room scene there.
Oh.
Kind of reminds me of when I would interview kids for the student newspaper in high school. And just when you're in high school, the kids just bug out, right?
Brutal.
I mean, do it at a lunch in the cafeteria. Everybody's saying something in the back. It sounds like boys are having fun in the locker room there.
Kind of expected it, you know, because like I said, when I walked in.
You're getting the googly eyes.
Well, you know, yeah, they were looking at me like, you know, who are you? Because generally the only person they talk to at home is one of their radio guys or their PR guy. Although I got to think in Memphis, man, that's a bigger city. And I got to think, of course, newspaper staffs now are so small. How often do they cover the local minor league game? And because of technology now, quote-unquote advancements in technology with regard to putting out a newspaper, deadlines are a nightmare.
So do you think 60 years in the future, Dick, when everybody, all the interviews are done through Zoom for athletes, somebody's going to have the novel idea of going to the bullpen or going out to the dugout and interviewing somebody in person? Are we going to have to refine that?
Yeah. You know, and a lot of media people I've talked to have really, really embraced and so enjoyed getting back to talking to people in person. Even if you've got a one-on-one in a Zoom situation, it's not the same. Obviously it's not as personal. And 60 years from now, I would be willing to bet that everybody will have a private Zoom channel or something like that. You know, like if you want to talk to somebody,
oh yeah,
punch them up right here on this channel.
All groceries will be delivered. People are, hey, let's go to the grocery store together, or let's go and pick out a movie at the Blockbuster, the one in Seattle.
Yeah, the one left.
Things are changing.
You know, you can still get DVDs at, Redbox?
Yeah, which are, you know, next to McDonald's and CVS. Well,
there's one next to Walgreens right over
here. You can get an actual disc.
Yeah.
You'd have to put in a player.
Now, kids, a disc. No. I actually went through, I was watching a movie, where was I? Somewhere in a hotel or something, and I had to go. I couldn't watch the end of it. And it's just some cheesy movie. And in fact, who's the guy who played Mark Zuckerberg in the Facebook movie?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Jesse
Eisenberg.
Yeah. He played a guy who was like a sleeper spy and didn't know it. One of those movies. And there's a lot of them like that. And, you know, it was pretty cool. It was pretty engaging. And I couldn't say, I don't know how, you know, I missed the last 30, 45 minutes of it. And I was trying to find it, and this is before I had streaming capability in the house. So I went to Redbox, and so I went through every genre they had, and I couldn't find it. And now I've got streaming, of course, several different options, and I've not watched it again. But it is listed as one of those films. It's kind of like a guilty pleasure you know, one of those ones that it's very popular, but was not popular in the movie theaters. You know what I mean? So it's just incredible the way things have changed.
You think you'll ever go back to a movie theater?
I love going to the movies.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I've been a couple times since the pandemic ended.
Oh, you've been back?
Yeah, yeah. But there aren't that many out there that I really want to see.
See, I got HBO Max, and I've gotten all the movies to my house now.
Yeah.
I used to love the experience.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was my date scene, too.
Yeah.
If I was taking a girl on a date, we're going to a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And you have dinner before the movie, Dick. So you get to know them.
Oh, talk. Absolutely, yeah.
You don't
because
just sit there
supposedly taking her to a movie is one of the worst first date moves for that reason.
Right.
You know, don't take her to that unless you take her to dinner to get to know her. Comedy club, no.
No comedy club.
No. First date, no.
Because you got to be the funny one, not everybody else.
Well, I don't even be the funny one. You got to be the one talking to her instead of her listening to a comedian, you know. But, yeah, I'm like you. I like the experience. And I've got a gazillion movies. I don't even have HBO Max or HBO. But I've got so many, like anybody who streams any, I got the Roku box. So
you've yet to see Space Jam 2.
No. And I've got to be perfectly honest. Don't know that I'll get there. I will say this, though. I got a kick out of Space Jam 1. I did.
Space Jam 1 had Bill Murray. So yeah. There were some redeemable qualities.
Well, and yeah, that's what sold me. Because when I'm watching the previews of it, man, how old is that movie? 20 years?
At least.
Yeah. There's a clip and there's a scene in the movie where something, you know, there's all kinds of consternation and chaos. And all of a sudden you hear something like, perhaps I could be of service or something like that. And it's Bill Murray.
Yeah, he's there to save the day.
And the moment, remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And the moment I saw that, I'm like, I'm in.
Well, LeBron James is as insufferable as you'd think he'd be. He doesn't even pass the ball at the end.
So you've become a hater.
Listen, I'm going to give you a spoiler-free review of Space Jam to the very end. You know, Michael Jordan has his extended arm and he dunks it in the first movie.
Yeah.
Same situation, but LeBron's not going to make the basket. His son is wide open in the corner for three. Nobody's guarding him. He decides not to pass it. He has to get a power-up from somebody else that he eventually makes the basket. So even with his own son wide open in the corner, Dick, LeBron makes it about himself.
You're a hater. You're a LeBron hater now.
Well, add me to the club.
And you claim you are not a shut-up-and-dribble kind of guy, but that's what you don't like about LeBron.
Well, this is tricky subject here.
Yeah.
LeBron James likes to dip his hands into many different subjects.
So?
We unfairly make athletes role models in our society today. And if you are not informed on some of the things that you're talking about, it could backfire.
Well, now, does not informed mean you disagree with them? Because that's two different things. Maybe you're not informed.
No, I mean factually wrong things that LeBron James brings up.
Like what?
Like the...
Has he said something stupid about vaccinations?
I would have to go back and check the
tape.
There are just multiple instances where I feel LeBron James's opinion's not needed. And I feel like LeBron James is a guy that likes to influx his opinion on everybody.
Well, if we're going to put these guys in the spotlight...
That doesn't mean shut up and dribble. That just means, LeBron, stick to what you know.
That's shut up and dribble.
No, I'm not talking about any subject that's not sports. I'm talking about many subjects.
It's that one
letter. It's a fine line.
It's that one letter. You know, I don't agree with everything he says, but look, man, this is where we are in society. This is what sports means. And thank God for sports because you and I have jobs we like, right? So that's where we are.
But when somebody makes themselves the center of the universe, they create their own production company. They go to a different team so they can move out west and be in more movies.
That's okay.
They are susceptible to criticism.
We're all about college athletes being able to move to help themselves, right?
Well, we're seeing how that's backfiring. Uh-huh. 69% of the student athletes that are still in the portal.
That's true. Well, we are up against a break, and we'll have to pick this up on another time. Back in a minute, 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to our guests tonight, Chip Cosby and John Hale and Zach Thompson for chatting with us on Friday night. And just if you want to follow his success, his progress, just Google the Memphis Redbirds, and they'll have obviously game stories up. Not a whole lot of info, but, you know, that's about all you can get right now on minor league baseball. But, man, did he look good. He looked like his old self. But, again, he jumps from Class A to Triple A baseball. You know, a year and a half ago, he's pitching to college kids. So keep an eye on that. Thanks again for your calls, your tweets, your comments. For Billy, Dick Gabriel, that's it. Good night from Lexington.